Thanks very much, Rich. We're now going to move back to green turtles, and Jessica, one of our PhD scholars, is going to tell us about the energetics of green turtles and how they change with environmental factors. Thanks, Jessica.
Thank you. No, should be good. Sure. Yeah. All right, so back to turtles now. My project is looking at green turtles, and they're the most common species at Ningaloo, which makes them a little bit easier to study. But they are slow-growing and long-lived. And when we think about that in relation to how sea turtle populations are generally monitored, that's with track counts or counts of nesting females, anything that's happening in the population to do with the juveniles or any conditions that are affecting that foraging population can take many years to become evident in that breeding population. So how are we going to look at environmental factors and how these affect the population and potential future breeding? Well, we could follow cohorts of turtles right the way through their life up until their breeding age, but that can take anywhere between 30 and 50 years just to reach breeding age, and that might be a little bit too long for my PhD. So that's where models come in, and mechanistic models allow us to look at the entire life cycle of the turtles. So I'm using our dynamic energy budget model, which lets me model the energetics of the Ningaloo population, and I'm particularly interested in the responses to changing conditions and potential future scenarios. So for those unfamiliar with dynamic energy budget, or DEB theory, it's based on the principles that animals are made up of three state variables. So we've got structure, reserve, and maturity. And the theory follows energy as it flows as food is assimilated into reserve. And then this energy in the reserve is then used for growth to form new structure, for somatic maintenance to maintain the structure that the animals already have, and to increase the maturity level for juveniles or to reproduce when they've reached adulthood, and to maintain their level of maturity. And we can see that food is an important input into the system, but temperature is also important because it affects the rates of all these metabolic processes. And we can make a DEB model like this for any species, and to do that we need to start with some measurements of either growth or metabolic rate and things like this at different temperatures. And we need to know something about their food and temperature conditions under which these measurements were taken. We then take our food and temperature and use them as inputs into the DEB theory equations. Now, I won't go into details about these because there's lots of them. They're really complicated. But they're made up of a set of parameters. And these parameters are basically what defines a model for the species. So with these equations and parameters, we make some predictions. And then through a process of basically trial and error, we try different parameter sets until we're happy with ones that match our predictions to our measurements as closely as possible. Then we've got our parameter set for our species, and to use the model, we can then use new food and temperature conditions back into those same equations with those parameters and make new predictions for novel scenarios. So the parameters that make up a model for a species, these are some of them here. And they relate to how energy flows through the system. So they can be things like kappa, which is the proportion of the reserve energy that's spent on the somatic arm as opposed to the maturation arm. And there can be also things like specific cost for structure. So how much energy does it take to form one unit of structure of an animal? And so to do this for the green turtles, we took lots of measurements of growth and things that we had from the Ningaloo population. And we ran our models match, and these are the parameters that we found. Now, those numbers don't really mean that much to you, probably, but they just represent the first model for a green turtle using this theory. And we can compare it to models for other sea turtle species that have been made, and they sort of match within the range of parameter values that we were seeing for other species. So we're quite happy with these parameters, and they seem fairly reasonable for our species. So now that we've got our model, we can start to look at different kinds of energetics. And one thing that is really interesting is this idea of maternal effect. So it's the idea that the condition of the female can then affect the condition of her offspring. And these pie charts here just show the total energy used during embryonic development, and the colours represent the proportions allocated to each of those things. And if we compare hatchlings of a female that had abundant food to one that had limited food, we can see some changes. So if we just focus on the green, which is growth and forming structure, and compare it to the reserve energy here, we see that for the food-limited hatchling, or the hatchling from the food-limited mother, sorry, we can see that it takes a larger proportion of its energy to form a structure, which means it has less left over in the reserve. And this can become important because this reserve energy is what the hatchling will use to crawl out of the nest, crawl down the beach and swim out into the open ocean. So if it's got less energy to do that, that might start to affect things like survival. So we can see that the energy not only affects an individual, but it can also affect offspring as well. But back to the individuals now, we can now start to look at the entire life cycle. So here we've got the proportion of energy assimilated, which is this first bit here. And we can look at over curved carapace length. So as the turtle is growing, we can also think of this as a proxy for time. So as the turtle's getting bigger, it's got a larger and larger body, which means a greater and greater proportion of energy is needed to maintain that body. And this means that there's a smaller proportion available for growth. I can see this in wild populations where we tend to see smaller turtles growing faster and the growth rate kind of dropping off as they get larger. And we can see a similar trade-off between maturity and maturity maintenance, where as the turtles are getting older, they're increasing their level of maturity. It's taking a greater proportion of energy to maintain that maturity, leaving a small proportion available to increase their maturity. And we can see something interesting happening here. So this dotted line is puberty. So when turtles reach puberty, they no longer need to increase the level of maturity. So that remains constant, which means a constant amount of energy is needed to maintain this. But because the total energy assimilated increases, the proportion of this purple section can decrease, which allows this proportion of the red section to increase. And before puberty, this red section was used for increasing maturity, but after, it's then allocated to reproduction. So we can see that out of the total energy that this turtle has, it's using this tiny proportion here for reproduction. I can see this kind of reflects the wild populations where we tend to see large remigration intervals or time between nesting seasons for green turtles. So that was at the conditions that they're constantly at, but what about different food and temperature scenarios? So we can see that food influences the total amount of energy in the system, so we'd expect it to influence things like the ultimate size, how big can they get, how much reproductive output they have. But temperature influences the rate of metabolic processes, so we'd expect it to affect things like the growth rate, the rate of egg formation, things like that. So we can run scenarios of different hypothetical food and temperature situations and see what we get in different aspects of their energetics. So I'll show you a few examples of my preliminary results for this. So because they're in the preliminary stage, don't focus too much on the values, but we can just look at the patterns and trends that we can see. So when we look at size, we've got curved carapace length and time over here. The red line indicates current conditions and the black lines indicate different food levels. So we can see that they take a similar amount of time to reach their ultimate size, but that size is different at different food levels. And an increase in food seems to have a smaller effect on ultimate size than a decrease in food. When it comes to temperature, we've got something a little bit different. They reach the same ultimate size, but it just takes a smaller or shorter amount of time for them to get there. And we can now also look at reproductive output. So once again, food influences the total amount of eggs. This is seasonal reproduction, so in a breeding event, how many total eggs can they have? And food has quite a large effect, but now temperature also has an effect, and that's because it affects the rate of egg formation, so they can form more eggs in a season. And we can also look at sort of point life history stages, so for example, age at puberty. And first I'll look at temperature for this one. So the red again is the current situation. So an increase in temperature means I take a shorter amount of time to reach puberty and obviously a decrease larger time. But now when we look at food, it gets to be a bit interesting as well. So an increase in food obviously means I have a shorter amount of time to reach puberty. A decrease in food means that they have a larger amount of time. But when we get down to the bottom here, we can see some NAs. And that just means that when it gets down to, in this case, 32% reduction in food, they don't actually reach puberty, so they can never have enough energy to reproduce. And whilst these numbers might not be accurate, we see a similar pattern in loggerheads. So one of my colleagues, Nina Mann, has parameterised a model for loggerhead turtles, and she predicted that at a 64% reduction in food for the North Atlantic loggerheads, they would see a similar situation where they just don't reach puberty. So they're surviving and maintaining their bodies, but they're not actually breeding. And this can be really important when we think about things like when Matt was talking about heat waves wiping out seagrass. Well, we really need to think about, do these turtles have an alternative food source? Can they survive on what's there? And we really need to protect these habitats for them. So the next steps for my model, so all the models that I showed you were based on a constant food and temperature, so basically a generalised average of current conditions. That's obviously not very realistic. So my next step is to model some variable temperatures and food scenarios that might be a bit more realistic. And another thing that I had constant in the models was the time between breeding seasons, so that remigration interval. I set the model at the average of about 4 years, but again, that's not very realistic because when conditions are good, we'd expect breeding more frequently and the opposite effect. So my next step in the model is to let the model predict how often they'll breed. And that can be a really important parameter because going back to how we monitor sea turtle populations, it's really important to know these kinds of information when we're going from estimates of numbers of females nesting in a season to total populations. And we could take the model even further, and this might be a bit outside of my PhD scope, but these models become really useful when we can couple them with individual-based models and simulate population-level responses. And this could be used to indicate these population trends that might be occurring before they become evident in this breeding population. So with that, I'd just like to thank everyone involved. There was a big team of people, some of which are here today, and all the volunteers that helped collect data, my dev collaborators, and ex-Mouth DBCA. And thank you all for listening.